Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
So we're here today to talk about the non-exec director and what they bring to a company and by implication what they bring to the investor. So to enlighten us about this, I'm here with Chris Spence Phillips, who runs First Fight Non-Exec Directors, which is consultancy and search for chairs and non-execs. Chris, afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So tell us, first of all, how you got involved in recruitment of non-exec directors.
Well, I had a publishing business, which I sold, and then I got divorced and I thought I would need to start another business. And having read the Higgs report back in 2002-03, which you may recall, by Sir Derek Higgs, who was asked by the British government to look at the composition and effectiveness of British boards, which he did. And his report was the precursor of the Corporate Governance Code. And he was the first one to say that boards should have a minimum of two non-executive directors, independent non-executive directors, and larger companies should have half their board should be independent non-executive directors. So I read that and it sort of resonated with me and I thought, this is a great business opportunity. But what I didn't know at the time is that all non-execs then were appointed because they were friends of the chairman. So I was on the scene a bit early. But fortunately, cronyism, as Sir Derek Higgs called it, is less of an issue than it was, although it is still an issue. But I'm passionate about the way boards are put together and passionate about really good independent non-executive directors.
So what does a non-exec do for a company?
They're there to, as I see it, to bring specific skills. So if a business lacks financial expertise, you can have a financial non-executive director. Many non-execs have got backgrounds with the big four auditors and bring a valuable area of expertise.
But won't your FD have that financial expertise?
They should do, but sometimes one individual on a board with an area of expertise is not always enough. I actually like to see, in a reasonable size company, two individuals on the board with a specific expertise. So if you've got operations, you've got strategy, you've got finance, you've got an entrepreneur to drive the business forward. So you'd have two people who are strong in each one of those skills.
So with non-exec directors, give us an example of someone that you think has made a profound effect on a board.
It's quite hard to name specifics because there are client confidentialities. I think I would probably say in the last few years, the most often requested skill set is digital and e-commerce. Mm. And we still see boards or meet companies where there is nobody on the board. I mean, I spoke to one who you'd be very familiar with, an AIM company, who have done very well. They provide cosmetics, and they have had a tough time of late. They don't have anybody on the board who has any digital or e-commerce expertise, and I feel that they're missing out. They should have that expertise. They sell to retailers, and I think if they had somebody who had a really strong background in successful e-commerce business or digital business, I think they would benefit very, very strongly from it.
So if they bring this person in as a non-exec director to advise them in this area, how much of a contribution do they give in terms of hours? Because it sounds a big job, and yet I always thought that the non-exec probably did 20 hours a year or 30 hours a year?
Two days a month is the sort of standard. We always split it up to formal time to informal time, so a day a month for a board meeting or a strategy away day and a day of preparation time and talking to managers and research and stuff like that.
So what are the qualities and the qualifications required to be a non-exec director?
That's a pretty good question. It is not always very easy to answer. I tend to look at it from the other standpoint. I always quote the Chinese saying, "The fish rots from the head." If you don't have a good board, if you don't have a good chairman, you don't have a good CEO, the company isn't going to go anywhere, and it's going to go off the rails. If you have really good chairman, really good non-execs, then you can have a really good board. The prime focus of a non-executive director is to challenge, and the strategy being the most important thing in a company, maybe the culture as well. They should challenge that. They should question that. They should help refine it and make sure that the CEO is delivering on the strategy.
So as an investor, I'd say that your CEO is absolutely imperative, as is your FD. And beyond that, they just seem an extra cost to have. The chairman can be very influential, but the non-execs seem to be just an extra cost. And somebody, Lord Lee has a great joke, which is...
What is the difference between a supermarket trolley and a non-executive director? Between a supermarket trolley and a non-executive director? And the answer is that while the supermarket trolley has got a mind of its own, you can get more food into a non-executive director.
Yes, I've heard that. What I would say is that I read some research a few years ago from Coutts, which they'd done on boards, and they showed that over 50% of chairmen were dissatisfied with their non-execs. And I read that and I was sort of profoundly disappointed for a few days until it dawned on me that if you look at how most non-execs are appointed, it's hardly surprising that they don't add value and they don't contribute. A statistic that was in parallel to that is the number of non-execs that are actually asked to provide a CV before they're appointed.
It's very much the old boy network.
It's very much the old boy network. And if you appoint somebody like that, it's very random. And the chances are they're not going to challenge. The chances are they're probably not going to be current in terms of technology. And the chances are they're not going to contribute very much.
So what do you look for when you're trying to select candidates for non-execs?
We like to have a conversation with all the board members, but who's responsible for the appointment. So maybe the CEO, maybe the chairman of the nomination committee, and really try and understand what it is that they want. And very often they don't know. I have been had conversations with quite large companies with the HR manager or the chairman, and you ask them who they've got around the boardroom table, and I'm constantly amazed that they don't actually know. They say, "Oh, well, he used to work for Boots," or you know, and you say, "Well, I know who who he is and where he worked, but I wanted to know what he contributes at board meetings." A non-exec should contribute something specific. Every non-exec should be on a subcommittee. They should have an area of expertise. I'm not a fan of what I call generic non-execs, so these portfolio non-execs who collect umpteen roles and don't really put a lot of effort into any of them because they spread themselves very thinly. They, I don't think, do add a lot of value, whereas a younger, more dynamic non-exec with specific skills or has the confidence to talk about some specific area, whether it's strategy or whether it's digital or whether it's finance or governance or compliance, whatever it is, can really contribute at the board.
And do you find that when you speak to the board, they know what it is that they want, or are you trying to create the brief for them, so to speak?
They don't know what they want. Very often... It is changing. It's changing a lot. But very often the chairman says, "Oh, I just want a non-exec. I want somebody who doesn't rot the boat too much and, you know, doesn't give me too hard a time." But that's not what a non-exec's there for.
And they want that just to be legally binding that they've got a non-exec director.
Yeah, that's a box-ticking exercise.
Okay.
But that wouldn't be the sort of non-exec we'd like to provide.
So do you then write the brief for them?
We very often do, yeah.
And then how do you go about filling that brief?
We've got a database of just less than 10,000 candidates that we've collected over the last 7 or 8 years, all of whom have had to put themselves on our database. We don't put them there. They have to save a CV and they have to answer about 20-odd questions so that we know more about them than their CV will tell us.
And what would qualify them to get onto your database?
They have to register and they have to be approved. The approval process is basically looking at CVs and deciding whether they're the sort of person that we might consider appointing.
So what criteria would you be looking for?
I think we have a much broader criteria than a lot of other search firms. This is anecdotal, but we place about 30 to 40% of our placements currently are women, and we place more first-time non-execs than I think all the other search firms put together, because they generally don't like placing first-time non-execs. And the benefit of a first-time non-exec is that they are much more enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. They're much more determined to really understand the business and really want to contribute to the success of the dynamics of the board and the success of the business.
And the majority of companies that you're recruiting for, are they listed companies or are they private companies?
We are sector agnostic. We provide chairs and non-execs across all sectors, but we've done housing associations, PE-backed businesses, charities, couple of FTSE clients, but our focus at the moment is predominantly on AIM because we see a big opportunity with AIM companies with the rule changes in September, where the LSE said that all AIM companies have to comply with a code. So I think that's made a lot of AIM companies who tended to sort of dismiss good governance as something that they weren't really very interested in, and they didn't think their shareholders were interested in, to say that they now know that they have got to have two independent non-executive directors, have some diversity on the board, do board evaluations and have better shareholder relations and some of the other things that are in the code.
And can you name can you think of an example where you put a non-exec in that you are absolutely delighted with what they've brought to that company?
We Angle PLC, I don't know whether you know them.
Yes.
They've presented at ChairSoc. Andrew Newland came to us and he said that he'd been looking for a non-exec for 18 months and he hadn't been able to find anybody who he thought would add value to the board. And we sat down with him. Naomi, who's one of my senior consultants, had a number of quite lengthy conversations with him to really understand what it was that he was looking for. And we created a long list of 7 or 8 names, which we sent through to him. And when you send a long list through, you're always sort of sitting there wondering whether they're going to say, well, they're all hopeless, or whether they hit the mark. Anyway, he phoned up and he said, I can't believe the candidates that you've put forward. He said, we would take any one of the 7 or 8 on. They're all absolutely brilliant. And he took Dr. Jan Groen, who's based in Holland, on, and he's absolutely thrilled with the skills and the background that he's got and what he feels that he can add to the board.
And what did you see in him that was going to be so good for Angle?
That Angle wanted somebody with a very specific, very specialist background in cancer screening, and he had that. And they felt that it would considerably strengthen the expertise around their board.
And what were they looking for? What was their prime brief from for their non-exec director?
I don't think they'd added a director for some time, and I think they felt that their board was a little bit stale, and needed some more dynamism, need some more challenging. And I think that they're a very small board. I think they will add one of the other candidates. Actually, I think they might add two in the fullness of time. Once they've got over the induction of Dr. Jan Groen, they might well appoint another one.
And by contrast, can you think of an example where a non-exec director really hasn't done what they should have done?
Yeah, well, there are lots of those, but we didn't place them, I'm glad to say. Conviviality, where were the non-execs? Carillion, where were the non-execs? The banks, you know, going back a few years, Northern Rock, where were the non-execs? I don't think they were. If you look at RBS, they were all chums of the chairman or the CEO, and they didn't challenge. They weren't independent. I think independence is an underrated thing. Warren Buffett calls them outside directors, and I think that's quite a good description. They should be outside, and they should be passionate, and they should really want to challenge. They should really want to add value.
And you were talking recently about Cake and their board. Do you want to say a little bit more?
Yes. I'd met Luke Johnson a couple of times, and I felt that his board was good when he did his IPO, but that was at 40 million market cap. And a few years later, when they were a 440 million market cap, he had predominantly the same board. And I don't think that should be the case. I think boards should evolve with time, and I think you need to strengthen it. I think you need to add different skills. I said to him he's got nobody on his board. He had nobody on his board who had any property expertise. He had nobody on his board who had any brand building expertise. I think perhaps in hindsight he was weak in the finance area because his financial controls were pretty lacking. I do wonder what the finance director and the chairman of the audit committee were actually doing when they find, and the auditors as well, when they find a £38 million black hole. I also questioned with Luke why he didn't have a woman on his board, because he had an all-male board. And he looked at me rather coldly, and he said, well, I've never had a shareholder who has suggested that I should have a woman on my board. And I said, well, Luke, I'm a shareholder and I'd like you to have a woman on the board. Why? He said. And I said, well, let me ask you a slightly different question. What percentage of your customers are women? Ah, he said, okay, yeah, well, about 70%. And I said, well, don't you think you should have a representative of your biggest customer base on your board? Do you not feel that they would be beneficial to the board? Would they not be able to add value? He said, well, maybe. But he didn't change the board. And we see this quite often. Some chairmen, some CEOs want a small, cosy board. They don't want a bigger board. They don't want to be challenged. But from a shareholder's point of view, I think all shareholders would like to know that the CEO, the strategy, the finance functions within a business are being challenged.
And do you feel that the sort of almost extreme behaviour that's going on about having to recruit women onto the board is going a bit in the other direction, that, you know, some very good non-execs aren't being placed because you got to have a woman? So you get bad women on the board, but less good women going on the board because you've got to get that gender equality rather than perhaps the best person being on the board?
I think there's an element of that. A woman should be appointed because she's the best candidate, not because she's a woman. I don't believe in quotas. I think that the situation with the gender balance on a board is evolving. I know a lot of people still criticise the percentage of women on boards, and I can understand why they do, but in Scandinavia, for instance, where they have, or Norway, I think it is, where they have a quota, half the board have to be women. You have women who are then put on so many boards that they become ineffective. So it's actually counterproductive. Whether men are missing out, good non-executive directors, I think that that's possibly the case, but I think there are a lot of... I think one of the key things about a non-exec is that you should be current, especially with so many business with some sort of technology. You have to be current, and I think that too many non-execs are too old to really understand the technology that the businesses that they're on the board of are operating.
So will we see going forward younger non-execs?
Absolutely.
And what's the optimum age?
Well, I think, you know, we talk about diversity a lot. I think diversity should cover skills is the most important, gender is the next, and I think probably age is the next. I think boards do benefit from having younger people on it.
So
I always use the example of Mothercare. Mothercare have frequently in their history had an all-male board. They've never had anything other than a male CEO, which I find quite extraordinary. And I could give you all sorts of quite amusing anecdotes about Mothercare. But it's not to me, it's not a well-run business. I'd never invest in that business because I don't think their board really understands their customers. And I think if they had women on their board, they would.
Mm, good point. So what's the youngest person that you've got on your books as a candidate as a non-exec role?
I've placed a chap who was a senior consultant at McKinsey's. I've placed him in a couple of roles. It's absolutely outstanding.
And what's he, late 40s?
Yeah, early 40s, yeah. Very unusually making the transition from an executive career, yeah. Because if you've got a very successful executive career with McKinsey's or whoever, you know, you're going to be earning a lot of money. Why would you actually bring that to an end and go on the fairly tortuous journey of getting yourself non-exec roles, which does take some time.
And how much does a company have to pay for their non-exec director?
I suppose the average non-exec of an AIM company gets around £25,000 to £40,000 a year.
That's quite a big spread.
It is, yeah.
Well, why does someone get 40 or someone get 25?
I think it's size of company. Rather more than the time commitment, because the time commitment's pretty much the same. You would get more if you're on more subcommittees. So if you're on the audit committee or the remuneration nomcom, some companies have customer subcommittees or technology subcommittees. If you're on a subcommittee, you would put in more time and therefore you'd get paid more. But I think it's really determined by the size of the business.
And how many non-execs do most companies have?
They should have, AIM companies should have a minimum of two.
And is that normal to have two, or do they have more than that?
There are quite a number. Well, they might have two non-execs, but the big question is, are they independent non-execs? Because a lot of them aren't, and they cease to be independent if they're a friend of the chairman, if they've been on the board for more than 9 years, if they've had prior dealings with the company, or if they a representative of an investor. They're not independent. So I would exclude them and say that they shouldn't be counted, but a company should have two truly independent non-execs.
And do they ever have more?
Some do, yeah.
And what tips have you got for companies how to get the best out of their non-execs?
It's the skill of a chairman, really. I think they should be the right non-execs with the right background and the right area of expertise so they can understand the business. They should have sufficient time, so they shouldn't have so many other roles that they can't put in the time. They need to put in the time to understand the business, because if they don't understand the business, there's nothing more annoying for a CEO to ask a non-exec for their view on something, and the non-exec say, well, I don't know really, because I don't understand what we're doing on that. So, you know, the CEO inevitably is not going to ask them many questions again. So the chairman should have them on a subcommittee and should bring them into the conversation.
So basically it's keeping them informed and involving them is the key element to making it work.
And coming back to one of your earlier questions, the skills of a non-exec are fairly crucial, and that is actually why I think women make better non-execs than men, because they're more sympathetic to and they're more sensitive to what's happening around the boardroom table, and they, if they're intelligent, which they will be, they will ask the challenging question, but they'll have the determination, if they don't like the answer, to keep asking until they do get the answer that they want. So they do, they put the CEO on the spot, and I think that a chairman welcomes that contribution. But if they don't contribute, if they don't put in the effort, if they don't understand the business, or they're out of touch, they are like baubles on a Christmas tree.
And going forward, do you see the role of the non-exec changing, becoming more important? Any regulation, anything else changing that's going to change their position?
Well, fundamentally, it's whether people believe, and when I say people, I mean directors and investors as well, whether they really believe that non-execs can add a lot of value. I believe they can, because I've seen it in companies. I've seen companies where the non-execs are non-existent, and I've seen where they really add a huge amount of value, and the chairman really welcomes their contribution and appreciates their contribution. And that's what the situation that we want to get ourselves into. I mean, there are an awful lot of AIM companies with no independent non-execs at all. There are an awful lot of AIM companies with no women on the board. And I think that those are things that AIM and the regulators and AIM companies themselves should be looking to address.
Chris, thank you very much indeed for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.